2.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, warmer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 61 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 40s. Tomorrow night, it will be cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Hello, this is Michael with a programming note this Wednesday. Because of production delays, our coronavirus update will air at 1:30. So in 30 minutes, we will bring you the coronavirus update following Eyes on Success.
Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
Well, our vision is to create something that will be universal, okay? Like an universal signage, okay? An inclusive signage. If we can solve other accessible challenges, we will be able to extend the technology faster and in the end create a more accessible world for the visually impaired community.
And the technology that he is talking about is called NaviLens, which we've talked about before on this show, and we'll hear just how much progress they've been making on making the world truly accessible to all kinds of people.
We'll speak with Javier Pita, founder and CEO of NaviLens, about how the system is being used in transportation and other venues to provide location, direction, and other dynamic data to anybody who needs it. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Javier Pita.
My tip is put your passion in the thing that you want to achieve in order to achieve it.
And that's good advice no matter what kind of task you're involved in. But we'll hear how NaviLens has put their passion into making the world more inclusive for not only the visually impaired, but for sighted individuals.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success.
Let's start by meeting Javier and learning about NaviLens, the company. And we'll get to NaviLens, the product, in the focus segment in a few minutes.
My name is Javier Pita. I'm the CEO and founder of NaviLens. At NaviLens Technology, we have a passion to create a more inclusive world for the visually impaired community. And we have created NaviLens.
Can you describe NaviLens?
NaviLens is the next generation QR code that can be read without focusing from a long distance, for more than 60 feet far away. And we are putting all our passion in order to that this technology will be available in the most number of facilities, transportation, agencies, and food packages, and in general, all the things that can create a better world for the blind community.
So you're fully sighted. How did you get into the field of access technology for the blind?
Yes, very good question. I have a brother that has visual impaired, okay? And I have observed since my childhood the difficulties that my brother, my parents, okay, have in a daily basis.
And what motivated the idea of NaviLens. How did that come about?
I saw the possibilities of using the technology for the good. And we started to work on how we can create something with the technology in order to help the visually impaired community. Okay? And we started to think about the cameras. And our first approach was to use QR codes. But the QR codes, as you know, you need to be very close in order to read it, in order to scan it. So you need to know where exactly is the QR code in order to read it. And we decided between our startup called Neosystec and the University of Alicante to create a new kind of QR code that could be read from very long distance without need to focus. And was when we spent 5 years of our life, from 2012 to 2017, doing a very, very important research on how to achieve a new kind of QR code that can be read it without focus or without framing it. And at the end of this long research, we achieved that we think that is the next generation QR code, the NaviLens code, that can be read at 60 feet far away, 60 feet, that is an incredible amount, okay, of distance, without me to focus, and it was the beginning of the project. And in the end, making a technology that help the people, that for good, is much better for me than create technology only for increase the productivity of business or something like that.
For anybody who's never seen a QR code, a typical QR code is a small array of little tiny black and white squares.
Yes.
Your variant of the QR code has many fewer squares, and each square is much bigger than a typical QR code square, and that enables it to be read from a much greater distance, right?
Yes, yes, this is very important. The QR code was invented 26 years ago. It was created last century, okay, in Japan. It was an incredible invention. But the problem is, in that time, okay, the codification of the codes, artificial markers, was to use black and white. That means zero or one.
But you're using colored squares. Can you describe the benefit of that?
Using NaviLens, instead of use black and white, we use four colors. We use the magenta, we use cyan, and we use yellow and black. And using that, we can add in more information in the same space. And adding more information in the same space allow us to use bigger tiles. And use bigger tiles, okay, we can achieve an incredible distance capability to read the NaviLens code.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible in part by our corporate partners.
Find out more about partnership opportunities by sending an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is the NaviLens navigation system and what new features have been developed since the last time we did an episode about it a year and a half ago.
For people who aren't familiar with the NaviLens system, can you give a quick summary of how it works?
Yes, of course. So the thing is, we use the camera of any mobile phone, iPhones and Android, with using a computer vision algorithm to detect, to read the NaviLens code. And the idea is adding the NaviLens code on the physical asset, on the physical element, for example, in an entrance, in a bus stop, in, for example, in a signage indicating that you must turn right in order to access to the platform number 2, for example, okay? And the users can open NaviLens, okay, hold the mobile phone over the chest, and the camera will detect the codes meanwhile the user is working. So the camera will detect the NaviLens code very, very far away, and will read the information of that particular code. If, for example, we are detecting a bus stop, the NaviLens app will read that at, for example, 40 feet far away, okay, there is a bus stop, and will inform about when the next bus is coming. And the important thing about this, and using the computer vision algorithm, using the camera, is that we are not only telling the user exactly and with a lot of accuracy the distance to the element, okay? We are telling, informing the user what is the direction to that element. That is super important, so important in outdoors and indoors, of course.
Well, that's nice because GPS can get us close with our smart devices and our smartphones, but the last few feet are sometimes problematic. And also knowing the schedules of the buses is important. So basically what you're saying is a blind person is walking around some public space, the phone is scanning for these NaviLens tags and is automatically giving them directions.
Yes, in the outdoors, the GPS is not accurate enough in order to fill the last few yards problem. So you can use the GPS in order to go to the vicinity to the bus stop, but when you are in at the vicinity of the bus stop, you need to exactly locate where is the bus stop.
The other really neat thing I think about this technology is it is so easy to implement. Basically, these are printed signs. It doesn't rely on any costly hardware or batteries that are going to drain. You just print the signs, enter them into a database, and bingo, there it is.
Yes, this is a very important factor because when you build something in order to make a more accessible world, you need to build something that will be sustainable, okay? And the thing is, when, for example, we talk with customers and tell them, okay, it's as easy to print the element and add into the current signage or the current bus stop or any element, and they don't need to make any maintenance over the codes, okay? So in generally, this technology is scaled very well.
You told us how the NaviLens system is currently being applied in transportation systems. What other applications can NaviLens be used for?
We have recently launched the first food package with a NaviLens code that was in the UK. Kellogg's company, okay, the Kellogg's, launched past October the first food package with the NaviLens code in the Coco Pops, okay? So the thing is, in a food package, you have a lot of information. You have information about the calories, you have information about ingredients, allergens. So the thing is, how to make that information more accessible. The solution was adding the NaviLens code that is as simple as integrate the graphic into the package. And the incredible thing is that one user can read the code without know exactly where is the Coco Pops in the supermarket itself, okay, and access to all the information. Not only where exactly is, accessing to all the information about the packages.
That must provide an awful lot of flexibility about what information is provided and to whom.
We can create new kind of experience. For example, why not reading the information in your own language? So the thing is, the same code, our vision is to create something that will be universal, okay? Like an universal signage, okay? An inclusive signage, not only thinking in the main goal that we have, because if we can solve other accessible challenges, like for example, people that don't speak English to access to the information that the package has, we will be able to extend the technology faster and in the end create a more accessible world for the visually impaired community.
Tell us how the friends and family feature works.
Yes, we are very proud to launch the new friends and family feature. The friends and family feature is the ability to share the information that you record in the blank tags. The blank tags are the domestic use of the NaviLens code, where any user in the world can download the NaviLens app, download the NaviLens code, and use in a domestic use case. For example, labeling anything, of course. And for example, you want to label some boxes or some Tupperwares. For example, we have users that have sent messages to us in order that they are using the codes in order to label small trees inside, in order to add in the information. For example, imagine the last treatment that this bonsai received or something like that, okay? So you can easily record information in that codes that are your information. But what's the problem? we received a lot of messages telling, okay, it will be great in order to share the information that they are recording in the personal codes, because I live with my couple is visually impaired, or I live in a student's apartment with other friends, okay, or family. So we launched a new feature that anyone can share the information that is stored in that particular code. So for example, if I live in a student's flat, okay, with other, imagine that I live with another person that has sight loss, I can record the information in the Navines code and share that information with my friend in that flat. So when he or she is going to read the Navines code, he or she will be able to read the information that I store in the other way as well.
So essentially, I can share information that I created from my personal NaviLens tags with other people.
Yes, yes, of course, okay? And this is very funny because, for example, imagine that you store the food in the fridge and use Tupperware, okay? And you want to store, okay, this is rice or beans or something, okay? You can share that information and you can update information each other, okay? So if the other person writes something, the original person is going to read the original information that he recorded plus the new information, okay? And this is very funny. For example, imagine if you are in your own house. Of course, you know perfectly well your house, okay? Of course, you know exactly where are the light switches, where exactly are the different rooms in your house, but your guest doesn't know, okay, about exactly where is the different elements in your house. So you can use the Navines code in order to label things inside your house, for example, okay? And when your guest is coming to your house, okay, you only share this information of your Navines code, okay, with them, and they will be able to read that information independently, okay? And when the user is leaving from your house, okay, you can stop sharing with them that information.
So this NaviLens system sounds great. Can you give a demonstration of how it would work?
I have used my GPS in order to go to the vicinity to the bus stop. I'm going to open NaviLens, hold the mobile phone over my chest, and when the code is captured, the system will tell me
6 feet away, bus stop East 23 Street Broadway. Next arrivals, the next N23 SBS bus to Chelsea Piers 12AP is 5 minutes away, 6 feet away, bus stop East 23.
And in the moment that I walk,
3 feet.
Okay, so the system is telling me where is the exact direction to the bus stop, and the distance to the bus stop, and the next arrivals in real time. That is so impressive. And the thing is, that make to, for example, to solve the last few feet problem is as easy as to adding the Navines code on the bus stop. And this is very important.
So in case you missed it, Javier is near Barcelona in Spain. That example he just played was from the New York City Metropolitan Transit Authority program, where they've implemented NaviLens on the 23rd Street bus line in the middle of Manhattan. So that was a major achievement, getting that implemented in such a major system. When you were doing the demonstration, we obviously heard the speech describing where the bus stop is and what the next bus coming is, but there were also some various noises. What were those?
Yes, the noises are the location of the code, okay? So for example, if you are far away from the code, you will see an intermittent sound, very slow, pimping, 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 something like that. If you are close, okay, the interval will be close. So you will hear pimping, 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 okay? Mm-hmm. And if you are, the code is in your left, on your right, we change the sound in order to inform you where exactly is the code. And this is the classic mode at the NaviLens. The new NaviLens 360 Vision will offer an incredible new 3D position sound in the space in order to inform to the user where exactly is the code in an and awesome experience for the users.
So if you're wearing some kind of earphones or AirPods, does this information come to you in stereo?
Yes, of course, of course. In stereo and in 3D. We are using a 3D sound system that you can hear exactly in the space where is the code. With the new Navilens 360 Vision, the user don't need to still pointing to the code, so seeing the code with the camera of the mobile phone to know exactly where the code is. So for example, imagine you are very far away from the bus stop. You get the camera, you get the code with only one frame, okay, we capture the code, but in that moment you move to your right and the camera are not still seeing that code, okay? So with the new Navilens 360 Vision, the code will be tracked in the system since the first vision of the code. So if you move to your right, or you go back, or you go in a completely different direction, the code will be always positioned in the, located in the space and informing you that the code is, for example, at your 3 or your 4 or your 10 at, for example, 80 feet far away or something like that.
So that makes it very easy to orient yourself then.
Yes, yes. It's like a completely new experience for making a virtual Wi-Fi thing or making an augmented reality experience for the visually impaired community.
So I understand that you're also collaborating with some teachers of the visually impaired and visually impaired students in Wisconsin to make educational flashcards?
Yes, yes. He used the different Navilens code in order to implement different pieces of information on them in order to create a completely learning and fun experience for the students. This is very, very exciting.
Well, you've really put this Navilens system to some great and creative uses.
Something new from this year is the new school kit. The Navilens kit are a set of pre-recorded Navilens code with pre-recorded information on them. So for example, imagine in a school, you always have toilets, male toilet, female toilet, okay? You always have the principal office, mathematics classroom, okay, or something like that. So we collaborate with schools in the USA in order to define this amount of code that will be needed in a typical USA school in order to offer for free in Navilens. Indeed, any school in the USA and in the world can download the free Navilens codes for a school at free.navilens.com. And downloading that, you only need to print and put in the facility. This was the first collaboration that we did, okay, with the Wisconsin School for the Blind. And we are doing other very interesting projects that Tim Falberg can tell more about, because he is who is leading that kind of project that are amazing.
And we will be speaking with Tim Falberg and some of his students next week a bit more about these innovations like the school kit.
The other thing I wanted to point out to people is that for the user, this service is free, because the public venues like transportation places, the venue itself is paying for the service, but it's free to the user to use on their phone, as are the personal tags that one can make for around their own house.
Yes, absolutely. Our NDA is that this technology will always be free for the user, always, okay? And the thing is, when you, for example, decide that people go to a facility, to a metro, okay, and buy a ticket, okay, you don't pay for reading or seeing the signage, okay? So why the visually impaired people need to pay for use the signage, the accessible signage in this case? This is the fundamental of the Navilens technology, always free for the users.
The other neat thing about the Navilens system is that it benefits not only the blind community, but also people who are sighted. We didn't have time to talk about this, but Javier also pointed out to us on the side that this system was also being used, for example, on street signs in some communities in Barcelona. sighted people would use their phones to read these signs, and the signs would tell them not only what the street was, but maybe a little history about the street and some history about some of the famous buildings on the street. So it was useful for tourists also. And I think this will give the technology a great chance to expand because it's used by more people than just the small blind community.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Success. Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about NaviLens and how to contact them.
If people want to find out more about NaviLens or download the app, how would they do that?
Yes, it's very easy. NaviLens is available in iPhones and Android, of course. Okay, this is another policy that we have, to that any user in the world with any kind of mobile phone can use NaviLens. So the app in the Apple market or Google Play, they can search for NaviLens. And if they are cross for a facility that have NaviLens, that is more and more facilities right now. But if not, they can download the free NaviLens code and use for labeling things or for the other uses that we have talked today.
And how do you spell NaviLens?
NaviLens is NaviLens. The origin of the name was Navigation Lens.
For venues, museums, etc., who want to make their venues accessible, how would they go about doing that?
It's very easy. First, they must to take a look about in free.navilens.com, because we are launching new kits that are free that the venues can download it in order to implement in the venues, okay? Like, for example, the school kits or the association kits or something like that. If they want to create their own tags with their own information, they need to contact us at info@navilens.com in our website, okay? And we provide them of a professional account. And indeed, for example, in the museums, it's an incredible experience because the same NaviLens code that is helping to make more accessible information for the visually impaired community are helping to all the visitors to access information in their own language. In this case, in NaviLens, we translate information in 33 languages. And the other thing is that the museums can easily add in multimedia information for that specific code. So imagine, you only put only one code, you will not a piece of art or in one section of the museum, and you are creating accessible information for the visually impaired, okay? And helping to eliminate all the language barriers for all the visitors. Having a multimedia experience, accessing to more information, augmented reality information about that particular piece of art or something like that, okay? And we are adding the ability to add to the same code sign language videos, pictograms, okay, and easy to read information in order to create an universal signage for everybody.
That's great. Do you have a social media presence?
Our main social media channel is Twitter. Okay, so Twitter is very simple, NaviLens. Okay, and we are using as well YouTube. We in YouTube, you can see a lot of implementation, a lot of testimonies of the users, and a lot of tutorials in order to use NaviLens.
And your primary website for a potential user who wants to learn more?
Yes, it's very simple as well. It's www.navilens.com.
If you want to print out your own personal NaviLens tags to use them around the home or wherever you can make use of them, you can find more information about that as well as all the rest of the contact information that we just talked about in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 2108. Next week on Eyes on Success, as we mentioned before, we'll be talking about the NaviLens school kits. We'll speak with Tim Falberg, a math and computer science teacher at the Wisconsin Center for the Blind. And he first learned about the NaviLens system by listening to our previous episode in which we discussed it, and he thought, now that's a great tool. And he's been working with students to expand on the idea and create the school kits, And we will talk with him and several students about the NaviLens school kit and how they're making use of it.
Be sure to catch that episode if you want to find out more about the NaviLens system and how it has been used by these students at the Wisconsin School for the Blind. It's pretty exciting what these kids did.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, February 21st, 2021. Start with trust. Handling severe winter weather. By Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Several regions across Texas are facing freezing temperatures and severe winter weather as a phenomenon sometimes referred to as a blue norther sweeps through the state. Some cities even anticipated the lowest temperatures seen in decades. Homeowners prepared to avoid the cold and stay indoors, but steps still need to be taken to prevent damage from the extreme weather conditions. The cold snap posed a variety of problems: freeze injury to lawns and gardens, wear and tear from overuse on HVAC systems, hail damage to cars or windows, and most commonly, burst pipes. Luckily, there are plenty of precautionary steps you can take when dealing with wintry weather. When frozen, pipes can burst and cause flooding within your home. Easy ways to prevent pipes from freezing is to keep water moving through them by dripping your faucets and keeping your house heated to at least 65 degrees. You should also locate the main water shutoff in your home. In the event of a burst pipe, you will need to shut the water off to minimize water damage. If you are expecting hail, prevent damage by moving your car into a garage or using a car cover if you don't have covered parking available, and shuttering your windows. Texans unfamiliar with cold weather can also expect their furnaces to run constantly, so remember to give your HVAC a break occasionally to prevent overuse. If you are dealing with property damage due to the severe weather, you'll want to contact your insurance company to discuss what is covered by your policy. You may also decide to hire landscapers, contractors, or auto repair professionals to help repair any damage you accumulate during the cold snap. When searching for trustworthy professionals, use these tips from your Better Business Bureau. Find reputable professionals. Visit BBB.org to find trustworthy professionals in your area and read customer reviews on their business profile. You can also reach out to friends and family for recommendations or contact your insurance provider for a list of preferred vendors. Check licensing. Contractors and landscapers may need licenses to provide specific services, such as plumbing work or pesticide application. Go to the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation at tdlr.texas.gov to verify the professionals you hire have the proper licensing. Watch for storm chasers. In areas with extreme damage, contractors referred to as storm chasers may go door to door offering their services. They often pressure you into hiring them and rarely complete projects after taking payment. Avoid working with someone who comes to your door and resist high pressure sales tactics. For more tips on handling severe weather, visit us at BBB.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. I'm Michael, and coming up in our broadcast today, we will read some of these articles and more. Novavax expects to apply for authorization for COVID-19 vaccine in the second quarter of 2021. After disappointing start, Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine manufacturing in a better place now, White House says. NIH launches new initiative to study long-term effects of COVID-19. White House is increasing COVID-19 vaccine supply to states and pharmacies this week. White House says 3 to 4 million Johnson & Johnson doses will be released next week if EUA is granted. White House to distribute over 25 million free masks across the country. COVID-19 antibodies tied to decreased risk of coronavirus infection later, study says. Johnson & Johnson data hints that COVID-19 vaccine might prevent asymptomatic infections. New CDC forecasts suggest daily COVID-19 death rate slowing in the coming weeks. Combined flu and COVID-19 vaccine could be a possibility in the future. Here's what has to happen before the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be available. And coronavirus variant will likely drive a new wave of transmission come spring, some experts say. First, we'll take a look at our local numbers and then follow that with coronavirus briefs. These numbers are coming today from the Texas Health and Human Services Department. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 8,326. Probable cases, 7,651. Fatalities, 320. Estimated active cases, 1,584. Estimated recovered, 14,073. Midland County, confirmed cases, 16,236. Fatalities, 236. Estimated active cases, 913. Estimated recovered, 15,087. And from the Texas Tribune, health officials reporting coronavirus cases and deaths again after winter storm delays. Editor's note, reporting of coronavirus cases and deaths was delayed because of last week's winter storm. As a result, we are not noting weekly changes in cases and deaths. Vaccine distribution is also affected. Vaccine doses administered in Texas decreased. An average of 27,319 vaccine doses have been administered each day in the last week. As of February 22nd, 4.9% of Texans have been fully vaccinated. Hospitalizations decreased by 647 patients compared to a week ago. As of February 23rd, 7,014 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. New cases. On February 23rd, 7,556 new confirmed cases and 2,148 new probable cases were reported. New deaths. On February 23rd, 234 new deaths were reported. Now looking at coronavirus briefs. Global deaths from the coronavirus fell by 20% last week compared with the week before, the World Health Organization said. Part of a wider trend that also includes a decline in cases worldwide. The downturn in cases and deaths follows a winter surge in infections, but also has coincided with an increase in vaccinations, particularly in the United States and Europe. According to the World Health Organization, nearly 66,000 global deaths from coronavirus-related complications were reported last week. The third straight week, that figure has fallen. The number of new cases also dropped for the sixth consecutive week, falling by 11%, the agency said. The total number of confirmed coronavirus cases stands at 112 million since the start of the pandemic. More than 2.4 million deaths have been reported worldwide. The FDA review released Wednesday found single-shot Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine to be safe and effective, especially against severe cases. Data on the vaccine will be discussed in a meeting of the FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee on Friday. The committee will decide whether to recommend that the FDA issue an emergency use authorization, or EUA, for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The U.S. economic recovery is uneven and far from complete. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome H. Powell told lawmakers Tuesday nothing that the unemployment rate for the lowest paid quarter of the workforce is above 20%. A leaked World Health Organization report revealed that the organization last year thought China had done little to investigate the origins of the coronavirus pandemic. China's Sinopharm company has announced the approval of a second vaccine, this one from its Wuhan unit, with an efficacy of 72.5%. Doctors are delving into the medical mystery of a baby born with a new variant of the coronavirus and 50,000 times the median viral load of other pediatric patients. Now, here are some short articles. Novavax expects to apply for authorization for COVID-19 vaccine in the second quarter of 2021, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. The biotechnology company Novavax expects to apply for emergency use authorization for its COVID-19 vaccine sometime in the second quarter of 2021. Dr. Gregory Glenn, president of research and development for Novavax, said during a live Q&A with the Washington Post on Wednesday. Last week, we finished recruiting 30,000 people in the U.S. and Mexico, and we're expecting that result right at the beginning, maybe of quarter two, so pretty soon. And shortly thereafter, we would be filing for what we call EUA, or Emergency Use Authorization, in the U.S., Glenn said. So we're thinking quarter two, and then development could come fairly quickly, Glenn said. The vaccine we expect to be deployed widely. The company announced Monday that it has completed enrollment of its PREVENT-19 trial, a phase 3 study of its COVID-19 vaccine in the United States and Mexico. The trial enrolled 30,000 volunteers across 118 locations. After a disappointing start, Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine manufacturing in a better place now, White House says, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. Johnson & Johnson initially was behind on manufacturing its COVID-19 vaccine when the Biden administration took office last month, but it's getting better, a White House official said Wednesday. When we got here 5 weeks ago, we learned that the J&J was behind on manufacturing, and our team has been working with them since, and I think they're in a better place now, Jeff Zients, White House COVID-19 response coordinator, said during a news briefing. We've helped them with equipment and raw materials, which I think is helping to increase greater capacity, he said, adding that the initial production ramp was slower than we'd like. It was disappointing when we arrived, Zients said. I think the progress is real, and we look forward to continuing to work with the company to accelerate their delivery and their capacity. What happens next? Pending an emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, Zients said the Biden administration is preparing rollout plans for 3 to 4 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine next week. Zients said states will receive around 2 million doses of the vaccine, and the remaining doses will be allocated to pharmacies and community health centers. NIH launches new initiative to study long-term effects of COVID-19, from CNN's Jason Hoffman and Naomi Thomas. Dr. Anthony Fauci said he hopes that therapeutic approaches to treating long COVID could come from medications already available, but the newly announced initiative to study on long COVID may provide answers. The aim is to learn more about how the virus may lead to widespread and long-lasting symptoms and to develop ways to treat or prevent them. Initially, the initiative will look at areas including the spectrum of recovery across the population and what the underlying biological cause of prolonged symptoms. It's very difficult to treat something when you don't know what the target of the treatment is, And that's the reason why it's extremely important to take a look at these individuals, not only the scope of this, and not only the, you know, depth and breadth of the symptoms, but also to try and have some correlate that actually is a path of physiological correlate, Fauci said at a briefing from the White House COVID-19 response team on Wednesday. Once we get that, an important part of this is, as I mentioned, would be to design therapeutic approaches, hopefully by medications that we already have. We just need to know how to use them, Fauci added. Long COVID. A study published Friday found that 30% of people with COVID-19 continue to have symptoms up to 9 months after initial infection. The most common symptoms were fatigue and loss of taste or smell, although some reported cough, trouble breathing, muscle aches, and brain fog. Nearly a third reported worse quality of life compared to before getting sick, and some said they had trouble performing at least one usual activity, such as daily chores. White House is increasing COVID-19 vaccine supply to states and pharmacies this week, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. The supply of COVID-19 vaccine doses being allocated to states and retail pharmacies is increasing, Jeff Zients, White House COVID-19 response coordinator, said on Wednesday. From 8.6 million doses when we took office to 14.5 million doses this week, that's an increase of vaccine allocations to states of nearly 70% during the Biden-Harris administration, Zients said during a White House news briefing. In this week, we will increase the allocation to pharmacies to 2.1 million doses, Zients said. So with 14.5 million doses allocated to states, tribes, and territories, and 2.1 million through the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program, we've nearly doubled weekly supply of doses in just 5 weeks. White House to distribute 25-plus million free masks across the country. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients said today during a COVID press briefing that the Biden administration will deliver more than 25 million masks across the country. The masks will be available at more than 1,300 community health centers and at 60,000 food pantries nationwide. Any American who needs a mask can walk into these health centers or food pantries and pick up a high-quality American-made mask. Zients said the cloth masks will be available at no cost, will come in children's and adult sizes, and can be washed for reuse. COVID-19 antibodies tied to decreased risk of coronavirus infection later, study says, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. There's new evidence that connects testing positive for COVID-19 antibodies from a prior infection with a significantly lower risk of becoming infected again in the future. A study published in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine on Wednesday found that people who tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies were at a decreased risk of coronavirus infection compared with those who tested negative for antibodies. The results come from the study that say basically a tenfold reduction, but I would have caveats around that. In other words, it could be an overestimate of the reduction. It could be an underestimate of the reduction, said Dr. Douglas Lowy, deputy director of the National Cancer Institute, who was an author of the study. To me, the big message is there's a reduction, he said. The main takeaway is that being antibody positive after natural infection is associated with partial protection against a new infection. The researchers from the National Cancer Institute and the companies LabCorp, Quest Diagnostics, Aisian Incorporated, and Health Verity examined data on more than 3.2 million people in the United States who had completed a COVID-19 antibody test last year between January and August. Among those tested, 11.6% tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies and 88.3% tested negative. In follow-up data, the researchers found that only 0.3% of those who tested positive for COVID-19 antibodies ended up testing positive for coronavirus infection later, beyond 90 days, whereas 3% of those with negative COVID-19 antibody test results were later diagnosed with coronavirus infection during that same time period. Overall, the study is observational, and it suggests that there is an association between positive COVID-19 antibody test results and a lower risk of infection some 90 days later. But more research is needed to determine a causal relationship for how long protection from antibodies may last. Lowy said that more research is also needed to determine the risk of reinfection from one of the emerging coronavirus variants. He also emphasized that people who have tested positive for antibodies should still get vaccinated against COVID-19. Johnson & Johnson hints that COVID-19 vaccine might prevent asymptomatic infections, from CNN's Jen Christensen. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine might prevent COVID-19 infection without symptoms, starting at about 4 weeks, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's briefing document on the vaccine released Wednesday. Earlier studies from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have shown that most coronavirus cases are spread by people without symptoms. If a vaccine prevented asymptomatic infection, it might help reduce opportunities to transmit the disease, not just keep the vaccinated from getting sick. The clinical trial looked for asymptomatic infections among the volunteers at several points after they had been vaccinated. The trial found that the vaccine had modest protection against asymptomatic infection from day 1 through day 29. But after that, it seemed to offer protection. When the volunteers were checked at 71 days after they had gotten the vaccine, it seemed about 74% effective against asymptomatic infections. The document says these findings should be interpreted with caution and additional research is needed, since the follow-up time is limited and the number of volunteers in this sample was comparatively small. So, definite conclusions cannot be drawn at this time. New CDC forecast suggests daily COVID-19 death rate slowing in the coming weeks, from CNN's Ben Tinker. An ensemble forecast published Wednesday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now projects there will be 526,000 to 548,000 coronavirus deaths in the United States by March 20th. Notably, this forecast extends a week beyond the previous forecast, but the projected number of deaths has dropped. Normally, each new CDC forecast projects a greater number of total deaths over a longer period of time. The previous ensemble forecast, published February 17th, projected up to 559,000 coronavirus deaths by March 13th. At least 502,698 people have already died from COVID-19 in the United States, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University. Combined flu and COVID-19 vaccine could be a possibility in the future, UK virologist says. From CNN's Amy Cassidy. A combined flu and COVID-19 vaccination is a future possibility, a leading British virologist testified Wednesday. Wendy Barclay, head of the Department of Infectious Disease at Imperial College London, told UK lawmakers the most likely scenario is that a combination vaccine would be given going forwards in the future, which would combine influenza with an updated SARS-CoV-2. But that really is crystal ball gazing to an extent. I think the next year will really tell us much more about the epidemiology of how this new coronavirus variant will settle down and how quickly it might mutate and necessitate vaccine updates, and how long the immunity for the current vaccines that we're going to roll out to a large proportion of the UK population will last, and therefore how necessary it will be to give boosters. Here's what has to happen before the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will become available. From CNN's Jacqueline Howard and Jen Christensen. Johnson & Johnson says that it has 4 million doses of its COVID-19 vaccine ready to ship immediately once it receives emergency use authorization, which could happen this week. In an analysis just released, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said the company's single-dose vaccine has met the requirements for emergency use authorization. However, despite the excitement and anticipation, there are still several steps Johnson & Johnson has to go through before the vaccine will be available. Here's what happens next. The FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee meets on Friday to review data on the vaccine and decide whether to recommend it for emergency use authorization in adults 18 and older. Once the vaccine is authorized, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, makes recommendations to the CDC on how the vaccine should be used, such as among what age groups and on what type of schedule. An emergency meeting of ACIP is scheduled for February 28th and March 1st. Typically, the CDC director accepts the committee's recommendation. Shortly after that, the vaccine can be distributed and can start going into arms. What everyone wants to know is where the federal government will send those doses and who they'll be steered toward. We're hoping that ACIP will provide some guidance on the most effective use of the J&J one-dose vaccine. Claire Hannon, executive director of the Association of Immunization Managers, wrote in an email to CNN on Tuesday. States are looking for guidance for use of the vaccine in populations which might really benefit from the one-dose series complete, such as transient populations, Hannon said. We aren't hearing much on this. Coronavirus variant will likely drive a new wave of transmission come spring, some experts say. From CNN's Christina Maxouris, Holly Yan, and Amir Vera. A new, more contagious variant of the coronavirus, first detected in the UK, is likely to fuel a surge of cases in the spring, several experts predicted Tuesday. The variant, called B117, was suspected of causing renewed spread in Britain. It's been seen across much of the U.S., with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimating the variant makes up for more than 1,880 cases in 45 states. The variant could result in more of a wave around April or May, said Trevor Bedford with the University of Washington and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. So how can the U.S. prevent the suspected spring surge? Some experts said Tuesday the best way to get ahead of the surge is through vaccinations. Bedford, who has been closely following the rise of new coronavirus variants, predicted that vaccination and mitigation efforts such as mask use and continued social distancing will help prevent the virus from spreading further. I still do suspect that things will be brought under control in the summer and there will be very little virus circulating, he said. It's possible, however, that a new surge could begin in the fall, according to Bedford. The race to vaccinate. More than 44.5 million people have received at least one dose of their two-dose vaccines, according to data Tuesday from the CDC. About 19.8 million have been fully vaccinated with both doses, the CDC said, about 6% of the U.S. population. One dose of vaccine might be enough for some, NIH director says. It's possible a single dose of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine might be enough for those who have already been infected with coronavirus, but it will take more research to show that, National Institutes of Health Director Dr. Francis Collins wrote in a blog post on Tuesday. And that is your coronavirus update for this Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. Coming up next, national news from USA Today, and then following at 3, local news. Here are some of the volunteer articles that are being read this day. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, City Council. Council approves valet parking for downtown Midland. Agreement calls for lease of 3 parking spots to be used as part of valet service outside Midland Tower Building. Philanthropy. Study says Midland County ranks as one of most generous in Texas. Black History Month. Roy Nelson sees himself as a resource for community. And from the Odessa Americans front page today, COVID cases down in Odessa. Mass vaccines continue at Ratliff.